Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Pete Denby, co-founder of Hyperfinity, the decision intelligence platform for retail. This is To Affinity and Beyond, our podcast about all things retail and consumer with a keen focus on decision intelligence, data science and AI. I've been looking forward to this episode for some time. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Dr. Lorien Pratt, the co-inventor of decision intelligence. Lorien founded Decision Intelligence in 2010 alongside CTO Mark Zangari. She's a machine learning and decision intelligence consultant, developer, entrepreneur, writer, and evangelist. She's also chief scientist and co-founder of Quantelia, a software and consulting company offering machine learning and decision intelligence consulting and solutions. In her previous life, Dr. Pratt is known as the inventor of transfer learning, an important capability used in most machine learning systems today. She's also the author of the very first book on decision intelligence, which you can find at www.linkthebook.com. In this episode, we'll be diving into decision intelligence, the exciting tech category that Hyperfinity operates in. The amount of data we're creating is mind-blowing. One stat estimated we produce 2.5 quintillion bytes of data every single day. Businesses are creating their fair share of data, and it's getting harder to cut through the noise to make informed commercial decisions. Effective decisions are critical for business success. Despite this, a survey by McKinsey found that only 20% of respondents are confident their business excels at decision making. In the machine learning and artificial intelligence age, there must be a better way. So, Dr. Pratt, it's great to meet you. How are you today and where do we find you?
I'm doing absolutely great. Thank you, Pete. Delighted to be here. And I am in Denver, Colorado today.
Excellent. And quite chilly.
It's cold.
Okay. Just raining here in the UK. Standard operations. So just to kick us off, would you mind giving us a potted history of your career so far, please?
Sure. I was really honored to be able to start coding when I was a kid at age 14 in the 1970s. So I'm kind of your coder geek girl. I'm your classic nerd in girl form. Went on to develop the first online library catalog and get three computer science degrees. Based on that, part of my PhD was I invented something called transfer learning, which gave me a little bit of fame within the neural net and machine learning community. Through a series of strange circumstances, I actually went back to my coding roots after doing academic work for a number of years and pivoted from that into being a market researcher. So I went from the whole world of solutions and technology to having the honor, really, of interviewing hundreds of people every year to say, how do you go about using this technology? And I was shocked to learn that all these great algorithms that I was building, despite all the awards I was getting in publications, really weren't getting used by the largest organizations. So I founded my company, Quantelia, about 14 years ago, and the rest is history.
Okay, fantastic. Let's start with the basics. How would you define decision intelligence?
I think the simplest way to talk about decision intelligence, sometimes called DI, is that it is the discipline of turning actions into outcomes.
Okay. So how did decision intelligence come about? Why did you invent the discipline or the category, and you know what is it really designed to improve from your point of view?
So living at those two extremes, one very much deep in the new algorithm development world and developing machine learning through a winter and a summer cycle, and then swinging across to the world of the people who needed to use this technology, again, I found this massive discrepancy. I thought that as people got more senior in organizations and as decisions were more impactful on human lives and also on dollars and revenue and profitability, I thought decisions would get more rigorous because they had more impact. And what I found is quite the opposite was true, that less data was used, There were less formal methods. And so you have, you know, one experience I had was CEO of a very large multi-billion-dollar corporation made a $500 million decision in the space of 10 minutes without any sort of formal process. And I only mention that not because it stands out, but because it was typical. And this was really surprising to me that the biggest decisions use the least data. And so in 2009, I took some time off and I spent about a year just interviewing, just talking to people. I said, what should technology do? And decision intelligence filled that gap. I said, what should the technology do? What problem should it solve? It was that gap. And then I said, well, what should it look like if it was going to solve that problem? And they said, well, it should be visual, it should be intuitive, and a number of other characteristics. And so we called it decision engineering actually in 2010. But then we learned that no C-level executive wants to buy something with engineering in the title and renamed it decision intelligence around 2012.
Okay. Could you give us maybe one or two practical examples of decision intelligence in action, and you know, whether it's an organization or a business, you know, you choose really, but just to bring it to life a little bit.
Sure. So one of our first early projects was working with a very large bank out of Europe, and they were doing this project where they were changing their telephone systems from old-fashioned, what you call circuit switch telephony, to voice over IP phones. And this involved knocking holes in walls and running new coax and fiber cable through buildings. But it also involved some complexity of getting new phone contracts with the local phone companies and getting people, hiring resources to do it. It was a massive project. It was 53 countries and 10,000 separate buildings and sites and ATMs that needed to be rewired. And we came into that project and there were big five consultants kind of as far as the eye could see. And they had built this giant database of all the information for these 10,000 sites. This was a half billion pound project. It was very, very expensive and meant to produce a lot of benefit. And what was the problem is that despite all of this data, the planning, the decision making for what to do was still being done with post-it notes. And on a humid day, the post-it notes fell off the wall. So it really, in very stark contrast, showed a pattern I've seen. It happened in COVID. It's happening today with climate, where we're sort of inundated with data, right, and information. And there's this idea that somehow we can look at the dashboard and in our brains, we can put the data together to make good decisions. And turns out computers can go a little bit further than they do today in most installations, not just showing you a dashboard, but sort of wiring up the data to the outcomes, the business outcomes that you're trying to achieve, and then also wiring it back to the actions you have available. And that's what we did for that project. We actually took that giant data set and managed to fit it into the size of a spreadsheet, you know, just to find the key pieces of data that were needed for this very, very expensive decision. And we saved the project. It was a great, great opportunity.
Excellent. And where do you see decision intelligence being applied most prominently nowadays?
Gosh, I've seen it in a lot of verticals. I'm on a project to help sweet potato farmers make decisions about what they should plant and how they should treat things. I'm seeing a lot of decision intelligence in retail, healthcare. I know where you are, the NHS is struggling with some of its numbers and metrics. So I'm seeing people do decision intelligence in that arena. Telecom, it's quite ubiquitous. Anytime that you might think that a dashboard makes sense or even a spreadsheet makes sense, ask yourself, what's the purpose of that dashboard or spreadsheet? What's the action that it's meant to drive and to lead to what business outcome? And decision intelligence is probably relevant because it means you're taking that data just one step further and having it help you get from actions to outcomes.
Okay, I guess it's a we've seen a lot of growth in the decision intelligence space, or certainly companies who would class themselves as decision intelligence companies and decision intelligence vendors, and you know, we'd probably class our own businesses being part of that cohort. But I guess in any new kind of technology category, people, you know, the people's interpretation of that category, you know, can go off in different directions. So from your perspective, what do you think decision intelligence should include? You know, which discipline should feed into the category, and you know, conversely, what is decision intelligence not in your point of view?
Great question. Decision intelligence is an integration approach. Decision intelligence says you've built great machine learning model, you've got great data going into your dashboards. Maybe you even have some simulation of the business decisions that you're going to make. And so decision intelligence is very much not machine learning or econometric models or any of these other things. What it is a glue that says, let's take all these things as puzzle pieces. I sort of think of them as Christmas tree ornaments lying on the ground, and decision intelligence is the tree where you put the ornaments and connect the pieces in such a way that it drives value. I think what I'm hearing in the kind of public sector is that there's a data action gap, that we've gathered lots of data in many domains, whether it's COVID or retail or climate. And there is this gap between, okay, show me all this great COVID data on the dashboard. Should I go to the grocery store and wear my mask or not? We ran into that a couple of years back. But in retail, you know, show me all this COVID data on the dashboard. You know, what price should I charge? What new market should I enter? Which SKUs should I be trying to improve the brand on? And so it's that last kind of, we call it the last mile sometimes between the data and the action.
I really like that. It's a good way to look at it, I think. And we often think about this disparity between business intelligence, which, you know, is obviously has its applications and is very useful, but seems to be quite backward looking. And decision intelligence, it would seem, is a lot more kind of instructional. What you know, I've created some insight. What should I do with it? You know, what are the decisions that we should make? So it seems a lot more kind of practical and forward thinking. Would that be an accurate reflection?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That you know, when you look at a BI dashboard, what are you looking at? You're looking at data from either the past or the present. And I think the one exception to that is increasingly people are putting predictive models into their dashboards. So like a weather prediction or a market demand prediction or something like that. And back to your question before, decision intelligence is not prediction. It uses prediction models. And so that is a way we see the future, right? So there have been some elements of dashboards that have a little bit of prediction in them. But decision intelligence says, okay, given the weather is going to do this and your market demand is going to do that, now let's talk about the future impact of your actions, choices that you can take within that context of the prediction, and what those choices will lead to in terms of your business outcomes. So it's a different kind of prediction. It's a prediction about things that you have control over, as opposed to just, okay, the world's falling apart and, you know, who knows what I'm going to do about it.
Okay. And so for those organizations that are looking to implement decision intelligence, what would be, how would they go about doing that? What are the things that they need to kind of bring to bear to implement decision intelligence and become really good at it?
That's a great question, Peter. I think there's really two answers. There's a very lightweight way you can get into DI that if you'll indulge me, I'll describe it in under 3 minutes. You can start your watch and then there's much more involved approaches. This new book that's on my shelf, which is called The Decision Intelligence Handbook, has these 9 processes that you go through one after the other. But here's the 3-minute potted version of decision intelligence. You can do it today. You don't have to wait for technology. You don't have to buy the book. Here's what you do. Sit your team down and ask what outcomes they're trying to achieve and get them to be precise enough that you could measure them. Don't just say, you know, grow our revenues. Have them say, grow revenues by 24 months from now by 15%. You know, have specific targets that are precise enough that you could measure them. And then ask them again. Ask them to say a stupid or a funny outcome or an unintended consequence to sort of loosen up their mental powers. And what you're trying to do is get into brainstorming mode and try to think through, what are the unintended consequences of what we're doing? What are some of the actions we might not anticipate? And allow space for that, because so many organizations in complex environments are hitting unintended consequences. And if they just did a little collaborative exercise, they might be able to anticipate them. Then go back and do the same thing for the actions available to you. Have everybody, I do it on like a Kanban dashboard. I use a tool called Lucid Spark. You can use Jira or whatever you like. You know, put post-it notes for all the actions you have available to you that might achieve those outcomes. And do the same thing. Have people say funny things or stupid things. Loosen up your brain. Again, what you're trying to do is to surface actions that not everybody is thinking of, but, you know, get the quiet people in the room. And again, in complex environments, we tend to go into sort of tunnel vision. You know, there's three things we can do. We can change the price, we can do a advertising campaign or something else. Well, maybe there's a likelihood to recommend campaign that you haven't thought of, or some, you know, social media influencer thing. You know, try to surface all the possible actions. Draw those on your thing with your little post-it notes, and then try to draw connections. How does this action lead to this outcome? Well, this will drive more users within the context of this demand curve and then the pricing. And then what's neat with likelihood to recommend is you get a feedback loop, right? Because the more customers you have, the more people recommend. And if you can make some marketing decisions, you can start to get those winner take all feedback loops. And that gets pretty exciting. So there's your 3-minute version. Brainstorm and draw your outcomes, your actions, do it on paper. You would not believe how many organizations don't take the time to align around these very, very simple things. And we make 50,000 decisions a day in a workplace. And I promise you, we're never going to model all of those in some piece of technology. But if you can just get the humans aligned to start with, and then if you want to move forward, that same diagram ends up being a spec for a piece of software that helps you simulate those actions and how they lead to outcomes.
Okay, fantastic. And what are the key benefits you've seen come from organizations implementing decision intelligence?
I think they really fall into two big categories. One is saving time with your data management, and two is better decisions, better outcomes. So the first thing, and go back to that big European bank we worked with, you know, this giant, it probably cost them, I don't know, 10 million just to build this giant database, right? And a huge amount of data governance, data collection, data preparation, data pipelines. We learned on that project, as we've learned, and the whole field of decision intelligence has learned over the last 10 years, that if we had done the exercise I just described to you, where we figure out kind of the guardrails of the actions and outcomes, and then we take it a step further and say, okay, what data would inform that? The data that informs your decisions, if you start with the decision, leave the data out of the room. My data scientist friends will be angry at me. don't let anybody talk about your relational database or, you know, where your data comes from, because it'll melt your brain, because the decision itself is complicated enough. You need to allow some cognitive space. If you start with the actions to outcomes and then say what data informs that, we found that 10% of the data has 90% of the decision-making value. And we've also found that data scientists aren't trained to do this. When I talk to a data scientist, and I'm talking 100% of trained data scientists that I know, if I say to them, how do you go about talking to your decision maker who's ultimately going to use your data to understand what their business outcomes are, and therefore how your data or your dashboard could best support those business outcomes, they don't know how to do that. They're just not trained in, you know, what you might call design thinking or, you know, customer focused thinking. They're trained and rewarded by, you know, new algorithms and better performance and less uncertainty in their models. And so there's this really weird cultural divide. And so if data scientists could learn to take this step, the huge, huge opportunity here is take your giant data management costs and reduce them massively. And then, of course, just better choices and better decisions in many arenas. And we're seeing, you know, really, really big ROIs when people take even the simplest decision intelligence approach, like I just described to you.
Yeah, and it sounds as though there's organizations need to think carefully about the people that are involved in decision intelligence and make sure they have the right skill sets along the way. So they, a data scientist, for example, could be absolutely fabulous at analyzing data, but may need some support in being able to understand the business problem that they're looking to fix and, you know, then applying back the insight they create to inform the decision. So sometimes that needs some of the people involved in that process to make sure that the that kind of wider approach to optimizing decisions is taken advantage of.
I think a lot of organizations sort of say, you know, they sort of leave the data scientists in a corner and they don't really know how to describe the business problem to the data scientists. So the data scientists I talk to, they say they're so frustrated because they go into a meeting and they say, well, what do you want us to do for you? And they say, well, what can you do for us? And they go, what do you want us to do for you? And there's sort of this talking past each other that goes on because the business doesn't know how to articulate their decision-making in the form that the data can help. And the data people, you know, are just building all these models and data sets and dashboards, not really understanding the mindset of the decision maker. And what's sort of magical about, and I keep saying actions to outcomes, I'm really repetitive. What's magical about that formalism is this is what my dog does. It's antecedent behavior consequent. You know, you're in the kitchen and I say, sit. So that's the context, that's the external. He has a behavior, that's his action. He sits and then he gets a cookie, right? And so this is operant conditioning. It's how humans and animals think. You know, we think in terms of, oh, let's see, I imagine if I go and sit after she said sit, I think I might get a cookie. And we learn that reinforcement over time. And so it's very natural. I go back and forth. I used to train people for 20 minutes before I started doing the outcome and action elicitation. And then I tried training them for zero. And I found maybe 5 minutes of training is optimal before of my stuff, before I start asking them, what are your outcomes? What are your actions? And so, you know, 5 minutes of training, well, that's because it's how they already think about things. They've got mental models where they're doing mental simulations. Let's see if I charge a higher price or if I do this particular brand intervention, how do I think that that will ripple through and affect, you know, my success according to whatever metrics I like. So all I'm doing is taking what's already in their heads. And it's wonderful because if you're in a room and doing this and everybody's been keeping these really complex decisions in their heads and it's really hard, and now you're drawing a picture of it, there's almost this sigh of relief in the room. Oh, it's on paper. I don't have to memorize all of that. And what that does is it sort of offloads your brain so that you can think much more effectively and creatively about complex decisions.
Great. Clearly a topic that you know lots about, you're the authority on decision intelligence, so much so you've written two books on the topic. So in 2019, there was Link, which I referenced earlier in the podcast. And then later this year, you are releasing the Decision Intelligence Handbook. So could you just give us a quick synopsis of each book and, you know, how you hope that the books will help those that read them?
Sure. I think high level people process. So Link is really about the people in the discipline of decision intelligence and how it emerged. It's meant to be very readable. My 85-year-old mother read it, and it's meant to be something that's very accessible that says, you know, here's what cybernetics does. Here's what machine learning does. You know, here's all these different disciplines that are all very separate today. And then here's this emerging discipline of people in organizations and how they've realized that there's this gap between the data and the models and the actions and the outcomes and how they're starting to fill that gap. The new book, the DI handbook, is, okay, that all sounds really good and fluffy, but what do I do? And so the DI handbook is just these 9 processes. First do this, then do this, and you can tailor this process this way. Oh, here's an exercise to practice this thing. And it takes you through what I described earlier, you know, the outcome elicitation and the action elicitation. And then it also says, okay, if you want to convert that to software that's going to run that simulation, that's going to let the computer start to help you with your decisions in complex environments, here's how you go about doing that.
Okay, great. And when can we expect that later this year?
It is an early release right now. So you can actually, O'Reilly does, my publisher does this thing where there's like a draft full of typos that you can get to. So if you go to the dihandbook.com link, it'll take you to the O'Reilly site and get a 30-day free trial. And you can look at the draft today. And then the full book will drop in July.
Excellent. We look forward
to it. With the typos removed.
Good stuff. Okay, so final question. Both Gartner and Alibaba have named decision intelligence a top technology trend over the last 2 years. So it must be a great feeling to see how far yours and Mark's idea has come. And we've certainly seen that in our own business, you know, the real proliferation of decision intelligence companies and people starting to use the DI terminology. But where do you see decision intelligence going in the future?
I think by the end of the 21st century, we're going to look back at AI alone and data alone as, I call it, chocolate chips, not chocolate cake. And that people will have the expectation that if they're asked to use a computer and to use be data-driven or evidence-driven in their most complex decisions, they won't sit down at the table and be served a bowl of water and a bowl of flour and a bowl of chocolate chips in this sort of undigested form. Instead, the expectation will be that you enter an immersive interactive environment in which you can experiment with different choices and observe the flow of causal impact of those choices through time to lead to outcomes, and that you push another button and the computer runs all kinds of choices in the background and says, okay, given what you've told me so far, here's the choices that I think will be best. I think all organizations, if they have a monthly meeting where they review the numbers, will not purely be backwards facing, but there'll be an expectation that we'll look at forward-facing numbers in order to plan. And I believe that policymakers who are making big decisions that impact all of our lives won't really be allowed to implement new legislation or new policy without running decision intelligence simulations so that they can kill people or injure people in simulation before they have an impact on actual human lives. It's okay, going to fantastic. Be a real ride. It's going to be a great century.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, great. And if our listeners want to find more out about you, what's the best way for them to engage with you?
My favorite is to take my course, Getting Started with DI.com. It's a long name, but you can remember it. DI, of course, standing for Decision Intelligence. That is the best way to reach us right now. And then, of course, linkthebook.com and dihandbook.com are the two books.
Fantastic. Well, I've really enjoyed the discussion. Thank you for joining us. And for those listening, if you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the podcast via your favorite podcast platform, tell a colleague, or send us your feedback to peterdenby@hyperfinity.ai. Lorien, thank you so much for joining us, particularly early in the morning over in Denver. And we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter. And thank you to your listeners for their time today.
Lovely. Thank you. See you next time.